This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. If you're voting by mail this year, you can thank the Yankees and later the Doughboys for setting a strong precedent. Mail-in ballots were first introduced during the Civil War for deployed Union soldiers. That system was expanded and formalized during World War I. This election season, military personnel are casting their ballots from aircraft carriers, islands in the Pacific, or from any of the almost 800 bases across the globe. The many voting options allow for deployed personnel could prove fruitful for expanding the civilian voting system. Steve Walsh is the military and veteran affairs reporter for the American Homefront Project. He's based at KPBS in San Diego and joins me now from Camp Pendleton. Hey, Steve, welcome back to the show.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks. So how exactly does someone cast a ballot from an aircraft carrier? Walk us through that.
Well, yes, there are all sorts of laws that are set up to make this easier for military voters. How do you cast it from an aircraft carrier? You request a ballot from your local jurisdiction. By federal law, they're required to send out a ballot some 45 days ahead of time. In California, that means they're the first ballots to go out. You can also, there's a separate federal system where you can request a ballot by electronically, by mail, and every state has to have some system to allow you to transmit that ballot electronically. In California, you can do it by fax. In other states, they allow you to do it by email. So the vast majority of them still use the U.S. Post Office and the Military Postal Service, which right now until the end of November will have a priority mailing, priority handling for military and overseas ballots.
Well, I cast my ballot by absentee this year by mail, and what you're describing sounds a lot easier than what I went through. I had to request a form and then get my ballot and then follow through. So is it easier for foreign deployed voters than for people doing it within the U.S.?
Well, it's actually, a little more complicated, a little more difficult if you're deployed overseas. So that's why you have laws in place that to try to make it a little bit easier. So far it's worked. In 2012, you had, I think it was some 24% of military ballots were cast. And when they made some changes into the law to make it a little easier to get those ballots back, the percentage went up significantly. So it's harder, but then they're doing a couple of things to try to make it easier for you.
And where are folks registered to vote? I know here in North Carolina, there are more than 90,000 active military personnel, but most of them aren't from here originally. So where are folks registered? Is it where they're stationed?
So it's complicated. So every single state has their own system, and you have to follow that system. And it also, it's your call. So if you want to register where it is, where you're based, you have the option of doing that. You can also register where, back at home, if you see that as your permanent address. It's mostly a matter of, at least in California, of proving that this is your place of residence. You give them the phone bill, your electrical bill, and then you can't change back and forth. And then, of course, you certainly can't vote in both places.
So is it fair to think of active duty military as a voting bloc? Are there particular trends that really define these voters?
Well, there has been some polling data on this, and I talked to a couple of the pollsters. And, military voters will vote national security a little more than the average voter will. And they tend to be more conservative. They also tend to be more white and male. Military Consult put out a poll after the Atlantic article where people reportedly said that Donald Trump said the troops were losers and suckers. And they found that among military and veteran households, which is they combined the two, that support really didn't change very much. And they attribute that to that this group is a little bit older, it's whiter, it's male, and they have been Trump's base throughout. But like everyone else, the number one issue seems to be this year, the economy. So people are voting their pocketbooks, even though they're somewhat insulated from these realities, because they have a job and they have government benefits. But even so, they still buy cars, they still live in their communities, Their spouses still have to try to find work. So the economy seems to be what's driving this group right now.
You mentioned those particular quotes in that Atlantic article. I'm curious about some of the recent conversation about the transfer of power. We know the president has repeatedly refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power, which has kind of raised a lot of conversations about the role that armed forces may have to play in ensuring a peaceful transition. Are you hearing anything from your sources about how this could impact how they vote or who they vote for?
Well, polling data suggests, and this is mostly from Military Times, that in fact, this is not something when it comes to using active duty troops to patrol the streets or patrol polling places. This does not poll well among active duty. They, much like the top officials at the Pentagon, they would rather just simply stay out of this process.
How are the presidential campaigns talking to these voters? I know they can't really take trips to bases. There are some regulations about events that they can hold on bases and not. So, what are they doing to appeal to military voters?
Well, you saw that right after he left Walter Reed, that the president had a video message on the White House lawn, trying to address active duty voters, talking about how he had fought for pay increases and that he was rebuilding the military, that he more F-35s, more tanks, more ships. But for most candidates, it's actually quite difficult to reach military voters. I talked with Doug Applegate, who is a retired Marine colonel. His district actually covers Camp Pendleton, and by the way, that's where I am right now, waiting for an assignment. And he's among the things he said is, regulation really limits what you can do. You really can't target people with mailers. You can't have an event on base. He would never really consider going on base even to try to meet voters. So you really have to kind of just simply tell people who you are. He thinks that it's a net plus to be a veteran yourself, thinking that veterans understand other veterans, but in the end, he didn't win after two tries in running for Congress, and so it's not a given that veterans and active duty will vote for other veterans.
Do we know how much they vote at all? How likely is it? How politically active are military personnel?
Well, that's the thing. Even with all of these efforts to try to make it easier for people to vote absentee, they tend to vote at a lower rate than the normal absentee voter. It's in the last in the 2018, I believe it was about 26% of people voted absentee in the military. The percentage was about 56%, or excuse me, about 52% nationwide. So they actually, even though you consider this group to be one of the most patriotic and one of the most focused in on political issues, they tend to vote at a lower rate. And it may be because there are some of these impediments that it's just they're living in one place or they're living overseas, but they're voting somewhere else. And that's kind of a tough nut to crack.
So North Carolina also has a large veteran population. We've been talking a bit more about active duty members, but talk a bit about veteran voting and what you know about how veterans are feeling about the president's handling of things, especially the Veterans Affairs Administration.
Well, again, in that same message on the White House lawn, President Trump talked about reforms of the VA. As somebody who's covered the Veterans Choice Law over a number of years, I always point out that the Choice Law was actually done under the Obama administration, and Senator McCain was one of the big proponents. But there was a big revamping of it to create the Mission Act, and he touted that in his speech. And certainly veterans benefits and health care at the VA is a major issue for veterans. And again, as I was mentioning earlier, older white males are part of that Trump base. And a military consul found that group in particular has been particularly unchanging throughout Trump's presidency. There's been some movement in active duty that among active duty in the Military Times poll, it points that his approval ratings have dropped since the beginning of his presidency, but that core group that the military consults picked up, that core group has stuck with the president. It's not a majority, but is a solid group for him.
So in the next few weeks, as we lead up to the election, I know a lot of folks are talking about how much they're being contacted over text, over phone, mailers, all of that kind of thing. Are those the same kinds of things that happen on bases in the U.S. and around the world? Are how are military members kind of affected by this last crunch run up to the election?
Well, you know, in some ways they are insulated from that because there are so many rules that regulate what can be done on base. Now, of course, and I know this is the case in San Diego, most of the of the sailors actually live outside of the bases themselves. So if they're living out in the community, they're getting deluged with the same amount of email as anyone else. And they're receiving all those text messages that that are tied to their voter registration.
All right. As we close out, I'm just curious about if there's any kind of lessons you feel like civilian voting and this rise in civilian absentee voting should learn from the military voting system and how things have been handled there over the past century.
Well, looking at the laws and how they've changed over the last few years, there seems to be some real value in getting an early start, making sure people register early and making sure that they get those ballots out as early as possible to give people, you know, the maximum amount of time to get those votes to the polling place. But, you know, those votes arriving late are still one of the major reasons why that military ballots aren't counted. And there's not really much you can do at the federal level for that because each state has its own rules. In California, it's changed this year where now if a ballot is marked by Election Day, it can arrive up to 17 days after the election, which, you know, causes a certain amount of consternation because we don't know what the results are on election night.
All right, Steve, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. Steve Walsh, military and veterans reporter for the American Homefront Project, joining us from Camp Pendleton. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.